Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal. Joined today by longtime football and basketball beat reporter Jim Paulzine. And it has been a crazy week with not only National Signing Day, which I'm sure you guys all saw, but we also have a game week, and Jim's got games getting scheduled and rescheduled and plucked out of the air out of nowhere. So it's been a kind of a crazy week for the Badger coverage. But, I guess that's what we signed up for, Jim, but this is just – it's just so weird to go through a week and not know what's going to come game-wise or what's going to happen.
Yeah, we can't – I mean, we can't complain too much because, you know, 4 months ago or whatever when it looked like games might not even be played, we just wanted games, right? And so, I'm still waiting for the time, at least for basketball, where – the day of game, a game gets called off, you know, because someone tests positive. I think that it's almost inevitable that that'll come at some point. So hopefully, you know, there's not very many of those, if any, and we avoid those because at least now we've known about stuff in advance and they can still reschedule the games. I mean, I think
right. We
can get to this later, but the MVP of the season so far is Mark Van De Wettering, their director of basketball operations. I just can't even imagine how much time he's spending on his phone. With backup plans and plan C's and plan D's. And so far they've, you know, knock on wood, if they get to Saturday, they will complete their non-conference schedule. And that's, you know, I'm not sure that that was guaranteed at any point, really.
No, absolutely not. So give you guys a quick rundown of the show. We're going to talk about signing day, a huge day for Wisconsin, really signing 21 recruits in this 2021 class. We're going to talk about the Minnesota game coming up, battle for Paul Bunyan's axe. We're going to do our Big Ten picks. Another rough week for me. 0-6. I tried to go contrarian on a couple just to not do all the same as you, and then they all lost. So, and then, as we mentioned a little bit ago, the basketball season is kind of changing on the fly here, but it looks like we're going to get through the non-conference schedule, and then you set up some huge early Big Ten year showdowns for the Badgers. So we'll get into all of that right after this. All right, Jim, let's jump into signing day here. Obviously, when you've got a season that's going the way the Badgers has, and then you have this class that's just signed for the Badgers, a lot of the attention's on that. So, like I mentioned, 21 guys joining the program here. No flips, which was, I think it was expected, but I think it's just impressive that a program with this many high-caliber guys coming in didn't have any flips or any last-second surprises. Everybody came in 21 for 21. And Saeed Khalif, the director of player personnel for the Badgers, is basically the recruiting director. I think it's just a little fancier title than recruiting director, but he had a couple of media sessions with reporters this week, and it was really enlightening to hear him talk about recruiting in a pandemic and just trying to elevate Wisconsin and try to change kind of the perception of Wisconsin nationally. And when you land a class like this, which last time I checked was either 15th or 16th nationally, depending on which rankings you go with, but he said Wisconsin is a blue blood program. That's how we're treating ourselves, that's how we think we should be viewed, and that's how they're starting to recruit when you look at the last three classes. So Jim, you've been around this program a lot longer than I have. Just what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, I like the attitude. I like the spirit of saying that you're willing to go after some guys that maybe, you know, that maybe this program hasn't gotten that type before. I do like the spirit. I mean, I think it's a little premature to use the phrase blue blood. I think when I think of blue bloods, whether it's football or basketball, I think of teams that have done it over time.
Right.
You know, and so you gotta stack classes like this to be considered a blue blood. And there's, you know, who's to say they're not going to do that, but I just think it's a little premature. You got to do it year after year after year, and which is not always easy here. You know, I think we've said this many times over the years and people don't love hearing it, but this isn't a fertile recruiting ground that Wisconsin operates in. You know, it's not Ohio, it's not Florida, it's not Texas. You're going to have to go outside to get a lot of your talent, particularly the skill players.
And
you know, that's not easy.
And those are the guys that boost your rankings the most anyway. Like yes, linemen help and the depth of linemen, but it's the skill guys that, that jump you up those ratings.
Exactly. And you know, and so that's not always easy to do. And the other thing is this program, especially they get a lot of early commitments, and sometimes those guys don't get boosts in rankings. Now, I will say this, there were some of those guys that got boosts in rankings throughout the cycle.
Correct.
This year, which I think is, you know, interesting to see, because like in the past, they've gotten commitments in like February from really good players, three-star players, and those guys just don't, their star ranking doesn't change in part because, you know, nobody's chasing them anymore. They kind of know that they're locked into Wisconsin, but that, you know, a couple guys did get boosts in rankings this year, and you know, that bumped this class up a little bit, but you know, what a great class. I can't give them enough credit for landing this class, and now we'll see what they can do on the field.
Yeah. And I think bringing all 21 in day of was impressive considering what happened over at Michigan. I think that's a good parallel because Michigan is a blue blood, you know, Michigan is an established more of a brand nationally. And I know it's taken a hit in the last few years because of the on-field performances and things like that. But Michigan had two guys that were ranked in the top 50 or top 150, excuse me, flip day of, and I think they knew from what I read online, this is not like I'm reporting it, but from what I read online, they had a feeling that one was going to, but then the other one was a surprise. I believe it was a linebacker, was kind of a surprise. So the fact that Wisconsin didn't have that situation happen when you're bringing in a program record number of guys that are four stars and including a five star and Nolan Rucci, I think that kind of shows that they did their homework and they did the due diligence of like, these kids are not only the kids that will succeed on the field for us, but that want to be here and that, you know, really bought into Wisconsin. And Joe Rudolph kind of talked about that yesterday when we talked to him on a Zoom, that, you know, every guy that is in this class kind of has the same characters and the same things that matter to them, that matters to the Wisconsin program. And it's something that is kind of Wisconsin's perception as they go after, you know, air quotes, Wisconsin guys. But then when you're finding those guys that are higher ranked or, you know, just overall better athletes coming out of high school, and you can start doing that consistently like they have in the last couple of years, then I think that's when you start kind of pushing yourself toward that next tier. Because we've been talking about all year and even last year, Wisconsin's still a notch below like that upper echelon of college football. It's right there. They got to keep getting classes like this to crack that level and to and then obviously win games on the field.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to add to that other than I want to go back to one thing you said about just the fact that they kept this entire class intact. For me, it's particularly impressive during a pandemic where you couldn't go out and the season's going on too. You couldn't go out, you know, if a guy, and I don't know that any guys had doubts, but there was no option of going to these guys' houses and trying to win them back or kind of reaffirm what they, their choice in the first place. It was very much a different cycle than any other we've ever seen. And so that kind of shows, like you said, they got the right guys in the first place. They got the guys that wanted to be here and weren't going to change their mind. And it reminds me a little bit of the basketball class to some degree, where those guys were committed for so long and just never wavered. And that's a sign of getting guys that want to be here and don't, you know, don't want to be anywhere else. And I thought that was important. I, you know, signing day stuff, I thought was really good yesterday from the UW's perspective, just in kind of how they presented stuff, some of the videos they did, kind of hearing more about that as guys staying in touch on text thread, which is so easy these days, but I still think it's impressive when groups can kind of get to know each other before they even arrive on campus. And you get the sense that that's happening here.
Yeah, and that aspect is so important because guys like Deacon Hill in this class, the quarterback, the only quarterback they brought in, and some of the linemen and Hunter Waller that have been committed for over a year, basically, they became like basically staff recruiters. You know, they were pulling guys in, and every time that somebody would be interested, they were talking to them. And it's something that Paul Chris alludes to all the time. It's like the players are their best recruiters, and well, the recruits are good recruiters too. And I think that played a big factor into this. And as we kind of just look at this class overall, Jim, I wanted to talk about, you know, a couple of the biggest wins and something maybe you're so worried about. but I had to rant a little bit. I know why they do it. I understand everybody's just trying to churn out some content for signing day, but I hate grades. I hate saying, hey, this 17-year-old that just signed his national letter of intent, that's a D. No, he's not going to be good. Like, you know, it bothers me. It just, I get it. Everybody's in the content game. You're just trying to, you know, throw some analysis or some opinion in there, but it's like predicting, and I maybe I'm being too optimistic, predicting success for some guys by saying they're a win, but like predicting failure for a 17-year-old that hasn't maybe been able to lift weights like a college athlete or eat like a college athlete or do all these things. It's like, I just don't enjoy seeing some people try to immediately project what this person's going to be 3 or 4 years down the line.
Especially at a program like this, I think there's, you know, there's probably some programs that you can project guys, oh, you know, they're losing two outside linebackers. They just got a five-star recruit. He immediately will come in and fill a void. And you can base a grade or a win or a loss off of that, right? This program is so difficult to do that because it really is a developmental program, and it's going to be pretty rare for you to go out and pick a guy that specifically will fill a hole on the next year's team. You know, you could probably have done that for Jalen Berger last year. And maybe to some degree, you know, an outside linebacker like Nick Herbig, but I don't know that we thought Nick Herbig was going to be the one that would jump in and immediately contribute at a position of need necessarily. I think we looked at that as kind of a group effort, and maybe one of them will emerge, and Nick Herbig has emerged. With Berger, you kind of saw, hey, Jonathan Taylor's leaving. They're going to need help at running back. He was a highly regarded tailback who could come in and help immediately, but you still don't know. And so I agree with you completely. I mean, it's really hard to grade. And you know what? You look at some of these classes that after a year or two, you would grade them as C's. And then in the third and fourth year, guys develop and contribute and get really, really good. And all of a sudden that C improves to a B or maybe an A. So yeah, it's a dangerous thing to do, I think.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. That all being said, I want to talk about just some, let's change it to highlights. Instead of the wins or losers, like here, some of the highlights to me, I think TJ Bowler's the outside linebacker. Jim Leonard called him the outside linebacker plus from Iowa, because that's a guy, I traveled down to Tiffin earlier this year to watch him play. That school is like two interstate exits away from Iowa City. And then it's, you know, an hour and a half or maybe 2 hours away from Iowa State. That's a guy that shouldn't leave Iowa traditionally. You know, like that's somebody that should have, or like traditionally would be a guy that Iowa prioritizes, but Wisconsin was able to go in there and get him. And I think that's a guy that not only can do a bunch of things on the field that Wisconsin doesn't quite have, because he's got this rare, his frame, he could be a guy that you say, all right, you're going to lose 15 pounds and you're going to be a stronger, like freakish version of Zach Bond as an outside linebacker. Or you can say you're going to gain 15, 20 pounds and be a monster defensive end quickly because of the skills that you have. But maybe he stays around where he's at right now. This gets to college strength and everything, and they use him as both. I mean, Jim Leonard kind of said that the versatility he has to do some different things is really exciting to him. So to me, I think that's like the biggest win when you consider all the factors, the athlete that he is, the offers that you beat out from the in-state and then Alabama and things like that, and then what he's going to be able to do, we think. I think that's, to me, the guy that stands out the most in this class.
I think that's a really good one. You know, like there's a couple categories you can consider here. I think Rucci probably is one that you can consider a big win, right? He had everybody in the world.
That's a chalk pick. That's definitely the chalk pick, is Nolan Rucci for sure.
Right. And so that's kind of the easy choice. He did have his brother here, which I think certainly didn't hurt Wisconsin's chances. Mm-hmm. Another category I think is there's a lot of in-state guys that were very highly recruited, Hunter Waller, Braylon Allen, you know, so I think you can kind of throw some of those guys, but when Wisconsin lands in-state players, it's not necessarily considered a surprise. I do consider those wins, you know,
certain. For sure. I agree.
The guy I'm going to choose is Marcus Allen for a couple reasons. You know, he's out of Ohio. It's a position of need. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, he seems like a really good player, and we'll see. You know, they've had freshmen here before at that position that take some time to develop. So I don't know that he's going to come in and be a stud immediately. And maybe Skylar Bell ends up being the better of those two at that position. But he's the one that jumps off to me as being the potential to be a really big win.
No, I'm with you there. Going on the other side of that, though, position that I'm worried about is wide receiver. Now, the fact that they only are bringing in two, I think, is more because from what Joe Rudolph said on Wednesday, it's pretty likely that we're going to see Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor back with the Badgers next year. So maybe the room was just too full to try to bring in somebody else. But the lack of depth that's in that receiver room right now, we see it on the field every week. You know, like we talk about all the time in this podcast, just the lack of playmaking on the outside right now, and it's really hurting them. So maybe Skylar Bell or Marcus Allen can come in and contribute quickly, but I'm still worried about the wide receiver group as a whole. Graham Mertz, I think, is going to help in the future. Maybe it's the next class that the receivers kind of see what he can do with a full off season and a full year to, you know, not have these struggle performances really maybe hurting that. But I think the combination of what they've got, the quarterback position, and the obvious need that they have a wide receiver moving forward, I think that becomes, now that you've only brought in two for 2021, that becomes your, at least in my opinion, your number one concern with the 2022 class is finding some receivers to replace what you're going to lose and the fact that you need to elevate that position as a whole.
Yeah, I can't think of another position that I would put in that worry category right next to that one. I agree with you totally. It's, you know, I think this season showed more than ever that the development at the position just hasn't been good enough. And, you know, lately Devin Chandler, I think, is a guy that popped up last week and maybe he can be a player. You know, Chimere Dike, I think in time is going to be a really good player, but you do need to kind of build some depth to that position. And, you know, I think you're right. Maybe getting three in this class would have been a better scenario. But I think that does move up to kind of the number one priority in 2022 is that position. Another one to me, you know, just because they use it so much is tight end.
Sure.
I know they're very high on Jack Pugh. I thought Joe Rudolph was really good on talking about him yesterday. But, you know, at some point Jake Ferguson's going to leave, whether it's, you know, this season or, you know, next season. And we haven't seen a ton from those young guys. You know, there's no obvious next in that group per se. So that's another one where, you know, I do think that's a priority going forward is kind of adding to that position.
Yeah. I've got to believe that the internal hope is Clay Cundiff once he gets healthy, and then Cam Large, who was a freshman in this year's class, become that guy. But I'm totally with you that that's a position they got to look at. And then one minor thing, and this is only if, to me, there would be a concern if something were to happen, but what happens at quarterback? Let's say if Jack Cohn decides, you know, if I'm not going to play, I'm going to graduate and kind of move on. And then Chase Wolf, you know, if Chase Wolf says, hey, you know what, this isn't for me anymore and decides to transfer. So then you'd be left pretty thin at that quarterback spot. And you might need to scramble for a transfer just as a backup or something. But I think that quarterback is a spot is someone or is a position that internally I'm sure the Badgers are like, okay, we've got to solidify who's going to be behind Graham next year. Cause relying on a freshman as your backup is probably not a good plan. I imagine they've got some type of plan to make sure that somebody's going to be behind Graham Mertz next year. That's a reliable option.
Yeah. It's a tough one though. Right. I mean, it's a tough position to address because you're not going to bring in two guys in this class. I mean, almost always, once you get a quarterback in a class, that guy's got some assurances that he's the only one. And, you know, it's in a perfect world, yes, you'd like a quarterback every class. But sometimes you lose guys, and we'll see how their depth is, you know, come January, if those guys do make decisions to leave. But that's the one position you always worry about because it's a game changer. Graham Mertz goes down next season. You know, it's kind of like the Packers, right? Aaron, they live on the edge because Aaron Rodgers is such a good quarterback that you're not going to pay a lot of money for a backup. But the minute Rodgers goes down, and we saw this a couple of seasons ago, it's a completely different world. And you go from a really good team to a very, very average one or probably below average. And I think the same thing can happen at this level too, is it, you know, the depth of that position, if you don't have it, the ironic thing here too, Colton, is look at the way this season started. I mean, you had a guy, you had a senior returning starter, the future quarterback right behind him, and a guy that they really love in Chase Wolfe, and frankly, a number four quarterback in Danny Vandenboom, who they felt really good about. So, you know, it's funny how quickly depth can change. I remember that happening a couple seasons ago at tailback too. Not a couple, it's been more than that, like 5 years ago. You know, you lose a guy to injury or whatever, and all of a sudden the depth, it looks completely different. It's a game changer.
Absolutely. All right, let's jump into this Minnesota game here. Doesn't nearly have the stakes as last year's Axe game, where it decided the Big Ten West winner. But it's still meaningful. You know, it's the Axe. Everybody's excited for the rivalry aspect and the fact that it looked like for a while we weren't going to have this game. You know, we were talking on before we started recording here, Jim. I started the day thinking that the loser of this game probably doesn't get a bowl bid. But now when you see all these teams opting out of bowls, the number of bowls that have been canceled, like, I don't know if there's going to be enough teams. So maybe both of these teams, because they've got followings and they would draw a TV rating because they're a Big Ten team, maybe there could be a lot of weird, probably shouldn't be in a bowl participants this year.
Yeah, and then even like you do wonder how many of these teams just really want to be here, and what the split is when you talk to players. Like, you know, if a coach were to go to the players, and what's the split in terms of who's in favor of playing, who's not? And I think we heard from some guys this week. Wisconsin guys are very much in favor of playing as much football as possible. They want, you know, one more game, regardless of who it's against, means a lot to them. And that's, you know, that's a sign that these guys like to play the game. Mm-hmm. Like the sport. So, but yeah, and I'm like, I think we both agree, I'm glad they're playing this game.
Oh, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Like if this was Wisconsin versus, I don't know who it would have been.
Maryland or Rutgers, that, something.
That would do nothing for me and probably most fans. I don't get the sense that fans are totally ecstatic about this game necessarily, but it means something. And you know, the difference between 3-3 with keeping the Axe and 2-4 with the Axe going over to Minneapolis, I still think is pretty significant.
Oh yeah, I agree. This season. No, for sure. And I think, I believe it was Jack Sanborn kind of said that. It's like, this is a game every year. It's like, if you won that game, at least you did something well that year. Right. And with all the challenges and everything that this team's kind of faced this year, if you can say, you know what, we beat Minnesota, we went 500. Yeah, we had all these issues, but we beat Minnesota. You'll take some solace in that. You're not going to feel good about the year as a whole, but at least you'll feel good about that part. So jumping into the offense, we talked about just the lack of depth at the weapons this year. Doesn't sound like you're going to have Danny Davis or Kendrick Pryor. We're recording this after the Thursday Paul Chryst press conference. So it doesn't sound like you're going to have either of those guys on Saturday. They're not officially ruled out yet, but they haven't done much in practice this week, which is almost always meaning you're not going to play. It isn't confirmed because UW is not confirming individual cases, but the fact that of what Graham Mertz said last week and then the fact that he's not on the depth chart anymore, pretty confident in saying that Jalen Berger came down with COVID. So he's going to be out for an extended period of time here. All that being said, this offense has got to do something. We have watched three straight weeks, basically, of teams on the other side saying, we're not letting Jake Ferguson beat us, find somebody else. And I don't know if it's that they refused to or they couldn't because of the talent, but the offense just hasn't done it. Minnesota does not have a good defense. It's the worst defense they've played since the opener against Illinois. But at the same time, the formula is out, right? Double team Jake Ferguson, take him out as much as you can, and then make somebody else beat you. Wisconsin's got to show that they've A, noticed it, or and then B, can do something else and be effective on offense with Jake Ferguson not being as big of a factor.
Yeah, I do wonder, this is not to make an excuse for Wisconsin at all, but they have played three good defenses in a row.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Three very fundamentally sound defenses in a row. So I do wonder whether going against a bad defense again will open some things up. I don't think they're going to score 40 points like they did. No. Early this season, right? But I do think they'll maybe be able to get some more going, you'd hope. And, you know, I think we'd just like to see something different. I don't know what that is. Just something to provide a spark and kind of get this offense going. Part of this is I just think there's a confidence problem, you know?
Absolutely.
You hadn't do a wall enough and you're going to start to doubt yourself. And I thought it was really interesting to hear Joe Rudolph kind of talk about that. You asked him a really good question about just energy, the lack of energy. And he went into a spiel on how, you know, yeah, the energy is down. It's football to him is about accountability and love. It's about being accountable for the guy next to you and caring enough for him that you'll do anything and vice versa. And it's like, you know, I guess the implication there was there hasn't been enough of that. And he also mentioned too, like, it's hard these days. You're not meeting with guys in person. You're not spending that extra time in meeting rooms or on the field, and it's been difficult. And so I do think it's a lot of things. It's injuries. It's that. And it's just kind of stacked up against this team. And that's in part why the results have been the way they are.
For sure. And Garrett Groshek said on Tuesday, and that's kind of where the question came from, was that just as personality wise on the offensive side of the ball, they don't have many kind of always hyped, always energetic guys. And I think that's something you can't always plan for. Like, you, as a coach, you're kind of thinking, well, somebody will kind of bring that. But then when you get this far into a season, and Garrett Groshek's, you know, one of the smartest guys on the team and a very respected voice, the fact that he's saying that to me says, like, he feels it every day. Like, there's just not the spark here. And it's probably a admission of kind of a weakness of his own that he's not a guy that's going to provide that either. Like, it's a whole group thing that they just don't really have that spark, and they've got to find it. Like, that's just kind of a full stop. They've got to manufacture it. And it's weird because you're basically asking guys to be somebody they're not, at least in a limited capacity, kind of try to hype each other up a little bit. But I mean, Jim, we watch these games and you see it in person. They have a false start or they have a drop and guys hang their heads and they're kind of walking back to huddle. And it's not what you're used to seeing out of the Badgers as a whole, where it's very much positive and kind of moving on quickly from things that happen. It could be a culmination of, man, 3 weeks in a row, we're trudging along and not getting anything done. That could be it. But it just seemed, watching that Iowa game, it was, they were defeated. And like, I know they were in the game after the botched punt or the botched punt return by Iowa, but like, they were defeated. They didn't have really any type of momentum on offense that had the sideline going or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. And also, you know, it does bear mentioning that they are shooting themselves in the foot a lot. I mean, they could be doing themselves a world worth of favors if they just stop getting their own way, whether it's procedure penalties. They had to burn a timeout on a key drive when they were trying to, you know, they were trying to play catch up in the fourth quarter against Iowa. So it's a lot of things going wrong, and you just, you know, they're not being fundamentally sound in a lot of areas, which has been the trademark of this program. And so that's maybe the most disappointing thing to see. I think it's one thing if you can't get guys open downfield or can't get chunk plays together, but when you're giving up yardage that you don't need to, it's really compounded things.
Absolutely. Let's jump into the defense here, because that's a bright spot. You know, if anything can be said about this Wisconsin team, is that this defense is as advertised. And until late in the game last week against Iowa, they were as good as you thought. The big question this week against the Gophers is, can they stop Mo Ibrahim? He's having an incredible year, given the circumstances, given the fact that I think he's only played one game this year with his starting five offensive linemen. I went through and checked. I mean, their starting lineups and their notes aren't exactly accurate given all the COVID stuff that they've gone through, but he's only had, I believe, one game with a starting five offensive linemen, and the Minnesota offense is really boils down to, if we run the ball, we're going to succeed. If you stop us running, we're screwed. Like, that's it really boils down to, if they can run, they can win. If they can't, it's over. So that bodes well for Wisconsin because they have one of the best run defenses in the country. I just wonder, you know, complimentary football, all those cliches, can the offense do enough to keep this defense in good positions and not kind of, you know, do what they did last week where the defense is hanging in the game and there's just no belief that they're going to score on the other side.
Well, yeah, then you talk about energy level dropping, and I think that's part of it too. I just it's got to, you know, as much as you say the right things, those guys say the right things, it's got to wear on you if you're in the third quarter and it's a 6-0 game and you've done everything you can to keep your team in the game, and just you know that the chances of you scoring a touchdown to take the lead are so low. And so I think that had an effect in the second half last week. And Iowa did some good things. I mean, Iowa made some plays. I don't want to take
it. Sure did, yeah.
But I do think it really wears on you. And so I think the best thing that could happen is if in the first quarter this offense scores a touchdown, and you know, maybe that goes the other way and gives the defense a lift. I mean, I know creating turnovers is probably easier than it sounds. And I talked about this last week too, but man, that's another thing that could happen is the defense scoring a touchdown. It's really the one thing that they haven't done. I mean, they haven't gotten a lot of sacks this year. We've talked about that, but putting points on the board would be great. You know, it would be a huge boost to this team and might lift things on the other, you know, for the offense too. So it's, again, like, I know you can't just draw up a play that creates a turnover that creates points, but it could do them a world of good.
I hear you there. I think when you look at this matchup though, for the defense, it really is going to come down to the defensive line again. I remember last year I did my film room after the game on the way that Isaiah Loudermilk and Garrett Rand played against Minnesota, because Wisconsin basically had to play in nickel every snap last season because of how good the Minnesota passing game was. So they only had the two down linemen, but they were just mauling the offensive line of Minnesota and in the backfield, creating penetration and doing a lot of good things. They have to do a repeat performance of that on Saturday for them to have the best shot to win. And the way that Jack Sanborn, the inside linebacker, described it was Minnesota is the most vertical running team that we're going to play all year. You know, Iowa does their outside zone, their stretch plays where they're waiting for a cutback lane to open, or they're waiting for some defender to get beat on a block and create a lane. Minnesota's a little bit different where they're just coming straight at you and then letting Ibrahim make a decision, make a cut and try to beat guys that way. So it's really going to come down to defensive linemen winning some of these one-on-one blocks or some of these double team blocks, and then making sure that Minnesota never gets in that rhythm where they're picking up 4, 5, 6 yards a run, because that's when once their offense gets to there, then they can start taking it deep. Even without Rashad Bateman, who opted out, they still got a couple of decent receivers that can make plays down the field. So I think this game really comes down to the front seven and really the front three, front two of the Badgers slowing down this run game and kind of taking it out, making them one-dimensional.
I agree. Can I go off topic? Were you surprised? I was going to ask you this up top. Were you surprised that, you know, for a team that's statistically the best in the league, you know, I think they're number one in every major category, but number two in scoring defense. They didn't have a single guy on the first two All Big Ten teams. Or is that just is that you know, kind of how this defense is? It's a whole unit, not necessarily standouts within that unit.
I wasn't because of the record and the fact that, I mean, you kind of look like it's a team that have better records. We're going to get more recognition. And Paul Chris kind of talked about that earlier today. But I think there's also the fact that outside of Sanborn and maybe Chanel, like, nobody's had like huge stats. Like, they have good, like, Chanel and Sanborn have high tackle numbers, but they don't have the sacks. So they don't have the interceptions, the forced fumbles. They don't have that thing that really jumps out at you. And I'll be honest, like, I was part of the media poll. Like, I voted for some guys that I've only seen play like two full games, maybe. You know, it's tough when you're voting on guys that you were able to watch, and this Wisconsin defense, to really understand how well Jack Sanborn's playing this year, or maybe a guy like Isaiah Loudermilk is playing this year, you've got to watch a lot of their games, and it's tough to do that. And so I was a little bit surprised, but then when I kind of broke it down, it's like, yeah, I mean, nothing jumped. When you rack up the stats of what the Badgers are doing versus everybody else, the fewer games didn't help, but then just the fact that there's nothing huge that stands out statistically, I think kind of all played into it.
Gotcha.
One last thing on this Minnesota offense. Tanner Morgan came back to earth this year real hard. And yeah. I know when you're a quarterback and you lose your offensive coordinator and then a pandemic happens, it's going to be tougher. And then combine that with the fact you didn't have Tyler Johnson on one side and Rashad Bateman on the other for the whole year. But he is not nearly the guy. He was playing with so much confidence. And even when the offense as a whole was struggling last year against the Badgers, he was still slinging it, and he was still giving his receivers a chance. He does not look like the same guy at all this year. So I think that helps the Badgers, and this should be a game to me that Wisconsin's defense can really if Minnesota scores over 20, like that's a real disappointment in my eyes if you're the Wisconsin defense.
Yeah, I agree with that. Remember when Tanner Morgan was being mentioned as a potential first-round pick last year? Remember seeing that? I mean,
sure do.
Yeah, and like you said, he's really come back to earth. I'm giving the Wisconsin offense the benefit of the doubt to some degree on being good during a pandemic. I think just there's a lot of challenges offensively that, you know, I think I said this last week. I think it's a little bit easier to be a good defense these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, and harder to be a good offense. I'm willing to give the same benefit of the doubt to Tanner Morgan and that group. I just think,
sure,
you know, I think continuity gets messed up. And it's been the biggest thing during this pandemic. And like you said, they lost their offensive coordinator. There just aren't a lot of good offenses in this league this year. Ohio State is one you can count on. Who else do you consider a really good offense?
Indiana. But I mean, they haven't played since Wisconsin. I was about to say it's less with Tuttle, but they haven't been able to play since they had Wisconsin or played Wisconsin. So.
Yeah, certainly with Penix, they were definitely, that's a good choice. But other than that, it's been uneven, you know, for a lot of these teams. And I do wonder just how much the pandemic is kind of messing with the continuity for offenses.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It's just, it's funny because, yeah, like you mentioned, Tanner Morgan was getting mentioned as one of the best quarterbacks in college. And it's like, hold on a minute. This is that, if you always hear this phrase, but that is a true system quarterback. The system elevated him. The talent around him elevated him. And which is fine. That happens. That's football. But it was just funny to think back about that. All right, Jim, let's jump through picks here. Only five
breaking news. We got breaking news.
What is it?
Michigan State, Maryland is off.
Oh, gosh. Who's got the issues?
I didn't see. I just saw on Twitter while we were talking earlier. Can I toot my own horn for a second?
Absolutely. You're killing me.
Did you see my tweet this week?
Oh yeah, the Legends Leaders. That was great that
because it got some likes. So I'm gonna read it here for listeners. Here it is. This Champions Week add-on is turning into such a disaster that the Big Ten should just rename it Legends and Leaders Week.
But I love it. No, it was a strong tweet from the second I saw it. I like that. All right, so now we're down to four games, and one of them has a not double-digit spread, and it is almost seven anyway. So. A lot of lopsided games in the eyes of Vegas here this week for the Big Ten. First one here on Friday, Nebraska traveling to Rutgers. Nebraska is a 6.5-point favorite. I didn't really get this one. To me, Nebraska, who just lost to – I guess we probably should have talked about that with Minnesota. They didn't have 33 guys last week against Nebraska, and they still won. And to me, that says more about Nebraska than it does about Minnesota. So – you and I are both on Rutgers there. That's just too many points. And I thought Rutgers they haven't been winning all their games, but they've been at least playing hard and playing competitive in both of them.
Yeah, this spread is confusing to me as the Wisconsin-Iowa one was last week. It's a head-scratcher for sure.
All right, yes. Jim's on Rutgers there as well. All right, we'll jump to Illinois-Penn State. Illinois is going to Penn State. Penn State is a 15-point favorite. I'm going to take Penn State in that one. I think Illinois has kind of thrown their hands up on the year, player and coach-wise. And I want to talk to you about that, Jim, quickly here. Firing Lovie Smith. I think it was always a possibility for Illinois this year because of the step back that they took after a good year last year, especially defensively. But I thought maybe Josh Whitman, the Illinois AD, was going to give Lovie the benefit of the doubt with the pandemic and everything else. But they made the move, and I think the thing that makes it the most interesting now is who is getting floated out there as potential replacements.
So many great names, great for a lot of reasons. Like Brett Bielema's name is getting mentioned, and that would just be
allegedly allegedly interviewed on Wednesday for the job.
Saw that, yeah. It'd be such a juicy storyline, and you know, I think a lot of people would like him back in the Big Ten. I think, you know, for those of us that know Lance Leipold, who was the former UW Whitewater coach, now at Buffalo, love to see him get a chance in the league. I think he's a really great coach, and I think, you know, I think that'd be a good fit for him. It seems like it'd be a good fit for him. Jim Leonard's name got thrown out there. I don't know how realistic that is. Sean Lewis, a former UW player who's now at Kent State, his name got thrown out there. He's an Illinois guy. He's a dynamic personality. Dynamic offense. That one would make sense for a lot of reasons. I don't know that he's ready. I mean, he's so young. It would be an interesting hire if Illinois does that. But they'll have some options. I do think that's a place you can go in and win if they have the right guy. So it'll be interesting to see where they turn to. But man, Bielema back in the Big Ten West would be fantastic.
To me, if they hire Brett Bielema, that is a major mistake. If Lance Leipold wants this job, sign him up to yesterday. Because I looked this up. Buffalo has a harder emission standard than Illinois, which I would have never guessed in my life.
That's a good piece of research there, man.
Yeah. So he already knows how to recruit guys that are smart and good football players. And look at the product on the field for Buffalo has put out the last 2 years versus what Illinois has. Do you have any doubt that Buffalo could beat Illinois this year if they played?
No doubt.
Yeah. So to me, Lance Leipold could easily come in. I shouldn't say easily. It's going to be tough, whoever takes this job, but has everything, has all the tools, and has a proven track record. He's going to be successful where he goes, and he knows how to recruit to a very high-level institution. So to me, Lance Leipold's a pick. And then number two would be Sean Lewis, because if you're not going to get Leipold, get somebody who's at least going to make you so different week to week from what you see in the Big Ten that it's just hard to play you. You know what I mean? Like that used to be Purdue's old thing where they were true Drew Brees, five wide receivers. They were so different from the rest of the Big Ten. They were hard to play. And that's what, if you're not going to, you know, get the recruits that you are competing against other Big Ten teams at Illinois, be different schematically, or so different schematically that each week you're just a tough matchup.
Yeah, you're thinking of this from a logical standpoint, Colton. I'm thinking of it from absolutely a selfish standpoint, and I want.
I didn't get to experience Brett Bielema life, so I don't know.
Oh man. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see how it goes. I think any of them. Like I said, if you're asking me who I want, who my heart would be with, I would say Lance Leipold, because I do think, you know, I've dealt with him a little bit when he was at Whitewater. I think he's a genuinely good guy. I think he's a good coach. His track record speaks for itself. And I do think he'd have a chance to succeed at Illinois. So, I mean, that's what my heart would say, but my media heart would pull for Brett Bielema to be back in the league. And Sean Lewis would be, I mean, I talked to Sean Lewis too when Wisconsin played them last year. Great guy. I mean, great quote. I think he would spark some life into that program too. So I think if they stick to any of those three, I mean, I saw Jeff Monken from Army, his name thrown around. I don't know.
Yeah, another Illinois guy.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess that seems like a logical pick too. And I guess Illinois is going to find out how attractive its job is. It really is going to find out, you know, if people want that job and they think it's somewhere where you can win. Is it a sleeping giant? I don't know. I mean, they haven't won consistently in a long time. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I think it was from The Athletic. They had a story saying, you know, they've got this new facility and all this stuff and sitting near Chicago. And as I'm reading it, I'm like, none of that's different than the last 20 years. Like if you're just saying it needs the right coach, then okay. But the factors around Illinois outside the new facility have all kind of been the same. So maybe it is just a factor of finding the right person that's going to be able to do it and put it all together. All right, let's jump into the next pick here, because we could talk about this. I find that search to be one of the more interesting ones that's going to happen in college this year.
I take Penn State in that game, too. I don't know if you said that, but
Oh, my bad. Yeah, we both on Penn State. I think we said at the top and then talked about Illinois for 10 minutes. Let's jump to Minnesota and Wisconsin, save the Big Ten championship for last. Wisconsin is a 12.5-point favorite against Minnesota, And to me, this has got to be because of the COVID question marks for Minnesota. You really just don't know who's going to be able to play. But I mean, Wisconsin hasn't scored 12 and a half points since early November. So, I mean, what, they're going to win by 12 and a half? I don't know. We're both on Minnesota there.
Yeah, that to me is like, I think Minnesota could win this game. You know, I really do. I think it's going to be a tough game, and I don't see Wisconsin winning by almost two touchdowns. You kind of stole my thunder. They haven't scored that many points in a game. It's hard to believe that they're going to not only score points, but hold Minnesota completely off the board. I think it's going to be like one of those 20-17 games maybe. And I don't really know who I'd pick at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, jumping into this Big Ten championship. Northwestern is at Ohio, or I shouldn't say at Ohio State. It's in Indy. Northwestern, Ohio State. Ohio State is a 20.5 point favorite. Northwestern is already using this as some major motivation and underdogness coming into the game. And I'm going to say, I don't like doing this, but 20.5 is a lot given how good that defense is. Ohio State's still a better and more complete team, but I think Northwestern's going to be able to hang enough that 20.5 is just too many points.
Yeah, that's kind of the rationale I use too. I just think there's going to be motivation there. They're going to make it tough enough on Ohio State that they're not, you know, it's not going to be a 3-touchdown game. I think they're going to win by 10, 14, somewhere in that range. But I do think Pat Fitzgerald is very good at motivating his team and using the slightest slight to his advantage. And I think Northwestern is going to come in and play hard. They're going to make life difficult. They're going to make this game ugly probably. Sure. And so I do think it'll go into the fourth quarter and still be somewhat in doubt.
And I got to say, against the better teams Ohio State's played this year, which is really only Indiana and Penn State kind of early in the year, but they haven't put anybody away. Like, their defense isn't nearly what it was last season where they got a lead and it was over. Like, you couldn't do anything about it. But I just think that's too many points. I think that's a reflection of the fact that Northwestern's offense doesn't scare anybody, but still expecting a 3-touchdown win against that defense, I think, is too much. So we are both on.
Ohio State hasn't played either. I mean, that's the thing too, is like, I don't know, you know, is rust a factor? Is that a good thing? I mean, they've had time to prepare for Northwest longer, you know, they know, you know, so you can start the game plan a little earlier, but you know, it's this whole COVID season is kind of bizarre to wrap your head around in terms of what is the advantages that you have.
Let's jump into some basketball here. We talked about off the top, the weirdness of these games kind of coming out of nowhere last week or earlier this week. God, it feels like it was last week. Wisconsin hosted Loyola Chicago. You guys all might remember Sister Jean, the miracle run of the Ramblers a few years ago, but, I thought the two biggest takeaways, I was able to watch that game start to finish. It was my first one that I was able to finish this year. But I thought the biggest takeaway to me was Jonathan Davis is a massive spark for this team on both sides of the floor when he comes off the bench.
He is. He just provides energy. He provides a lot of things, energy, scoring. Like I wrote this the other day in my game story. He's a three-level scorer. You know, he gets the rim a lot. He's got a sweet little 8 to 10 foot jumper. It can be a turnaround jumper. It can be a floater. And he's, you know, he's, I wouldn't call him a great 3-point shooter at this point, but I think he's better than I thought he would be from that range.
Sure.
So yeah, he's added something. He's something, I've said this before too. He's different than what they have. He adds a little something, a little creativity and athleticism. And it's exactly what they need coming off the bench. I know a lot of people are calling for him to start. I just don't think at this point that's, why would you, you know, like he's playing almost as much as the starters anyways. You can play him at a couple different positions if you want. He's been a real big positive to a team we knew a lot about, but I think was missing some parts. And I think he's added some of those parts off the bench.
I'm with you. And with the foul trouble that this, I know it's mostly in the front court that's happening, but with the foul trouble, I would keep Jonathan Davis on the bench and make sure that he's available. If you get somebody with 2 quick fouls and he needs to play a lot of minutes, I'm with you. I'm keeping him on the bench for now. And kind of in that same vein is, I guess it's weird that we're talking about a really good team, but two of its bench guys, but Tyler Wahl just continues to be kind of the do like the fixer. It's kind of the role he has. Like, all right, we're not defending this, you know, swing guy well. All right, Tyler, go do this. Or we're not rebounding very well. Tyler, get in there. Like, he seems to be a guy that kind of that glues whatever you're not doing at the moment.
Yeah, energy is another one. Like, I that's a word I'd use for him. He had 1 point the other night, right? So you look at that box score and you think, you know, he didn't play well. It's the exact opposite. I mean, he just gives you – he blocked two shots. One of them was a three-point shot. He just made it look so natural. He gives you a little bit of hustle on the other end of the court. He just – he. I think they're best – you know, I've written this a couple times and alluded to it. People want to see Potter and Reavers together, and they want that to work so bad, and I get that because they're – you're probably your two of your more offensively talented players, but there's just some games where it's not going to work. And the other night was a perfect example of that. You can really only have one of them in the game at a time. And then that's where you slide Tyler Wall into the four spot. And he can guard the athletic four on the other team. He can get the ball and do some stuff on the rim. He's a good passer. He's a guy that helps you break the press. Cause he's, you know, he can dribble and his ball handling is pretty good. So I think you nailed it. He gives you a little bit of everything. And that's the exact, another thing that this team needs is a kind of a jack of all trades, a Swiss Army knife is what, you know, I think you've called him that before. And that's what he is.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And this week got so weird because not only is it finals week, you got this kind of a pickup game almost with like Loyola. But now you got Saturday, the conclusion of the ACC Big Ten Challenge a week later, the Louisville game. I think this is a big – this is not hot take analysis here, but like, this is your big test before you get into the conference play, right? Like, you play your non-conference games that are a little bit lower, some of the mid-majors, things of that nature. But now, all right, here's your first real big boy test, and it's going to either springboard you or kind of show you what you need to do going into the conference season. I guess as you look at this game, Jim, what are some of the things that you're looking for Wisconsin to either prove or confirm?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, like you've played one other power conference team, and it's Marquette, and you've lost that game. So I think this is a chance to kind of give yourself a power conference victory. I mean, I think in time, those Rhode Island and Loyola games are going to go down as quality victories, but, you know, add one more to your resume before Big Ten play. And then the larger point is, I still think this team has some things that needs to work out specifically offensively, developing some sort of rhythm and an identity. And I don't think it's quite figured that out yet. So you want to test yourself against, a really good team to see if you can kind of figure some stuff out before conference play starts next week. I mean, by this time next week, they're already going to have one conference game in the books and be getting ready for a game against Michigan State on Christmas Day. So it really comes fast and furious. You don't have a ton of time. And that's why I think a game like this is important. It's a different, like you look at Louisville's lineup, it's a different lineup construction than they're really going to see. It's a younger team. It's a lot of guards, a very perimeter oriented lineup. They're not very big. It's a lot of 6'7", 6'8" guys. And that's going to be a challenge. I mean, it's gonna be a lot of athletic guys that Wisconsin's defense is going to be put to the test against. So I'm interested to see. It's a little different. Each of these opponents have been a little different, and I think gives Wisconsin kind of a window into areas of weakness and what they need to get better at.
That's if you're a Wisconsin basketball fan, that 6'8" athletic guy has got to be a little scary, because that's pretty much all what Marquette threw at him, and we saw how that game went, where there was just really no flow, and Wisconsin had a lot of trouble inside, which it goes back to your previous point. Everybody wants to see Potter and Reavers together, but against Louisville, that's not a lineup that if you put both those guys out there, you're exposing yourself to a lot of different things. And it's just, I would be surprised if they play more than like 3 or 4 minutes together on Saturday.
No, I think you're right. I think those two will start. I don't think he's going to change his starting lineup, but I think you'll see a lot of Tyler Wall at the four on Saturday, or maybe Aleem Ford, maybe a combo platter of Aleem Ford and Tyler Wall splitting time at the four, or that's kind of your 3-4 lineup. And you know, I would not be surprised. Louisville's got a guard. Carlick Jones is a grad transfer from Radford. He's probably their best player. I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of 3-guard lineups from Wisconsin. If, you know, a Trice Davison Davis to go along with Wall and, you know, Potter or Reavers. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how they match up against this team, because you know, I don't know how good Louisville is. I really don't yet. And the other factor is they haven't played in, you know, 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah. There's definitely some rust there. Yeah.
Right. So I think it's a chance to get a quality victory against a team that's going to be really good in time. And maybe quite is kind of trying to figure things out for itself yet too.
No, that makes sense. You mentioned it. You're going to have two Big Ten games next week, one of them being Michigan State on Christmas. I guess when you look at where Wisconsin stands at the moment and what we know this Big Ten season is going to be and this gauntlet of a schedule, just how important do you think this is in this first week? We know what Wisconsin did at the end of last year, right? They caught fire, really figured themselves out in the Big Ten, and then ends up splitting a Big Ten championship. Is it a do or die type of situation on Christmas against Michigan State? Or like, is it, all right, if we were to lose that game, figure out what we need to from it and move on?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's too early to kind of make grand conclusions. I will say, if you go win at Michigan State, that's a huge bonus. I mean, what you want to do in this league is win your home games, and then if you can win all your home games and half your road games, 15-5, I think, gives you the title this year. It would have the last
two seasons. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
You know? So if you can get that Michigan State one early, I think that's huge. It's a place they haven't won in 16 years.
And Michigan State's got a good team this year.
Right. And there's no crowd. There's going to be no crowd there, but it's still, it's a good team and a tough place to play against a good coach. It's going to be a huge challenge. And that's why, back to your point, this Louisville game, this Nebraska game, if you can kind of figure some stuff out and figure out who you are going to that Michigan State game, then, you know, I think there's a chance you win that game, but it's going to be a good test, another good measuring stick. And, you know, from now until, you know, basically from now until March, these games are going to come every 3-4 days. And, you know, it's tough to, you better be able to move on pretty quickly, I guess is my point. Cause you're going to lose some, and there's gonna be another one right around the corner that, and you can't dwell on it, or else suddenly one loss turns into a couple in a row.
No, absolutely. Just a program note here for the show. We're going to take next week off with Christmas and everything. So wanted to give you guys an idea of what you're going to see next week. Lots of maybe a bowl game lead in. Who knows what happens with the Badgers this weekend. But Jim's been working on a feature for a while now on the first 5 years of Greg Gard's tenure as the Badgers basketball coach. Because what was it? A couple of days ago was the anniversary of the night Bo Ryan stepped down.
2 days ago,
excuse me. So we're in this position here where it's been 5 years. And you can tell us a little bit more about what all the things you went into, Jim, but I know you broke down just kind of where this program was, how he's kind of put his own stamp on it. And I think it's always interesting when you're talking about a guy like Greg Gard, where the perception is this job was handed to him, but I think when you talk to the players and the guys that are the coaches that are around him and stuff, it's like he's proven himself as a worthy coach and the guy that should have this job.
Yeah. And I think when you kind of look at, there's a couple of things that stand out about his 5 years. It's been crazy. I mean, he's dealt with a lot. It's not been a normal 5 years. There's been off court stuff. There's been challenging stuff on the court. It's been a bumpy ride at times. And I think the thing that stands out about him is he does some of his best work when things look the worst for him. That first season, I don't know that anybody in mid-January thought he was going to be the guy that would continue to have the job. And then he turned it around and they got to the tournament in Sweet 16. Last season, in early February, things looked horrible and they ended up winning a share of the Big Ten title. And there's been other instances during his time that he's, he's done some really good work in bad times. And so I think that stands out. And we did talk a little bit about the next 5 years, not to give away the story, but it's tough to project in the future 5 years, because this next year in and of itself is going to be crazy. The one-time transfer waiver is passing, name, image, and likeness is passing. Those changes are coming on the heels of a pandemic. And, you know, so it's tough for coaches to have much of a 5-year ahead plan. But, you know, we talked a little bit about that with him. I talked to some other people about Greg. So I encourage people to read the piece. I think it's going to be out next week and next Monday or Tuesday. And, you know, it's it's a long read, but I think there's a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah. And if you're going to read something long, read it from Jim. They don't feel long. Thanks, Colin. Yeah, you're welcome. All right. As we wrap up the show here, like I mentioned a second ago, we're not going to have a show next week. Who knows? Maybe we'll be able to sneak a show in before a potential bowl game, depending on what day it is. So just keep your eyes out on your feeds for maybe a pop-up show, depending on what happens with the Badger football team. And if there's no bowl game, then when we get back to the show, we'll be talking a lot of basketball because, as we mentioned before, we're going to be neck deep into the Big Ten season, and we'll see where this Badger basketball team sits at the moment. But if you're listening, make sure you go on Madison.com, check out all of our signing day coverage, all of our football and basketball coverage this weekend. Jim's pulling a doubleheader like a man, doing basketball in the morning and then coming in the afternoon over the Camp Randall, so that'll be fun.
My wife asked me if I'm going to immediately drive up to Lambeau Field and cover the Packers game too. She's providing some snark.
I mean, if we had a company that cared about us, it'd give you a helicopter and get you up there pretty quickly, but you know, whatever. All right. So for Jim Polzin, I'm Colton Bartholomew. Thank you guys very much for listening.